Today's attack comes amid growing fears of an all-out war in the Middle East, with Iran and its proxies threatening to strike back against Israel for the recent assassinations of senior Hamas and Hezbollah leaders. The U.S. is beefing up its military presence in the region, sending additional warships and fighter jets. CBS's Deborah Pata is in East Jerusalem.
The war drums are getting louder. Following Ismail Haniyeh's assassination, Tehran says Israel must be punished for what it calls its cowardly attack on Iranian soil. Both Israel and Iran say they don't want this to escalate, but nobody wants to be the first to take a step back. Former Israeli diplomat to the U.S., Alon Pincus.
And most worrying is a coordinated, the so-called 360-degree attack. Hezbollah in Lebanon, Iran from the east, the Houthis in western Yemen from the south, Hamas in both Gaza and the West Bank. So Israel will be encircled.
And where does America sit in all of this, and what should they be doing?
The last thing that America wants is a scenario in which they are dragged into the conflict.
U.S. General Michael Kurilla helped coordinate the defense of Israel during the Iranian attack in April, when more than 300 missiles and drones were fired, and was back here today meeting with Israel's defense minister. The U.S. still believes the best way to prevent this from spiraling out of control is a ceasefire in Gaza. In weekend protests, families and friends of hostages accused Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of choosing escalation over a deal. As the world's attention is focused on Iran, in Gaza, they count their dead every day. The remains of more than 80 Palestinians were returned today after Israel took some of the bodies to check if any hostages were among them. These are the nameless dead waiting for loved ones to claim them.
Well, this is Sandy Rios, Sandy Rios 24/7. That's a report from CBS. And really and truly, this is what we are being fed daily. CBS obviously has a bias. There is a lot of bias in that story. I'll give you an example. Who started this conflict? It was October the 7th. It wasn't the Israelis killing these two terrorists, one with Hamas, one of Hezbollah leaders. It didn't start with that. That's a response to the killings on October 7th and the continued threats to Israel from Hamas and Hezbollah. This is what it's all about. And so they never mention that. The U.S. is sending warships. They make it sound as though the U.S. is gung-ho about Israel, but that's just... Yeah, there are warships over there now. They're sending some planes, as I understand, and that's a good thing. But, you know, will they use them? I don't have confidence. Anthony Blinken has been saying to the Iranians, well, I mean, I don't know when you're going to hear this podcast, but right now the attack hasn't started from Iran. The full throttle attack has not happened on either side at this point in which I'm talking to you. Anthony Blinken, our Secretary of State, was advising Iran to, if you're going to attack, don't attack too much. Don't make it a real big deal. Just do a little bit. That's what he said. That is exactly what he said. We are dealing with worldviews that are so different. The left, Anthony Blinken's part of that, this administration, they are so afraid of conflict that they would give away their mother in order to stop conflict. They would certainly give away their country. They're showing us that because they don't seem to have any kind of understanding of fighting back or standing for anything. Just a don't hurt me, don't hurt me, don't hurt me. I think that's their mantra. I think really when you think about it, it can be explained by a really deep difference in worldviews, and that is that this life is all there is. And we have to save it. We have to cling to it. We can't have any problems. We can't be threatened. Oh, no, we can't die because we don't know what's going to happen after that. And then you have people of the book, and that would include Israelis and American Christians who believe in something much greater than this life. And so they act accordingly. They believe that in this life we have to exercise judgment. We have to, yes, have peace as much as we possibly can. But when it's time to fight, we have to fight and fight seriously. And so we have a real conflict of views on this. And American Christians are especially, it seems to me, I've talked about this before, but I will say again that pastors are not preaching about the mandate, really, in Scripture that we support Israel, not the government. That is different. We have to support the Jewish nation. We have to kind of separate the Jews from the actual government in Israel. But it's hard to do that. Governments are not perfect. The Israeli government is a secular government, and so they're going to be doing some things. You can't say, I'm going to support them no matter what they do. But they are fighting for their life right now, and we are, and I do it with, it sounds like an obligation, I do it freely of my own volition. I support Israel so strongly and their fight for their survival. And I don't know how Christians cannot do that. I do know how they can. They've had pastors who've gone through seminaries who've taught a lot of things that are just not biblical. And so they're not equipping their congregations. And that's why the waiver in support for Israel, especially among our young people, because then parents don't know how to teach their children, and their children and teens are not learning, and college students in church. It's just a vacuum. And so that's why we're going to talk today again with Dr. Jeff Meyer. He is the author of Should Christians Support Israel? Straightforward, an excellent book, an excellent tool, and he's just a great guy. It's really fun to talk to him. This is my second interview with him, which is really rare, as most of you know, certainly on a book. But we had a great conversation in Washington, D.C. recently at the Faith and Freedom Conference, and I want to play it for you and remind you at this crucial moment in Israel's life why we need to stand by them. Of course, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. We love hearing from you. You can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can listen to the program on any podcast platform, whether it's Apple or Spotify, whatever your favorite. Certainly home base for many of you is AFR Talk, AmericanFamilyRadio.net. If you go to that, you can find the podcast. That's our home base, AmericanFamilyRadio.net. Or you can go to SandyRios.com. That's the website, and it's very easy to listen to it at that point. We're in the middle of a real struggle against globalism. It's happening really all over the world. It's a fight for life, faith, family, and freedom. And we're fighting, really, the Prince of Darkness. I was just reading in Luke about the temptation that Satan brought Jesus to, and he promised him all the kingdoms. And he said he had that power. That's what Satan declared. I can give you all of this. He is the prince of darkness. He is the prince of this world. And he seeks to destroy our children and our very souls. And make no mistake, the attack is starting now at conception. Preborn's network of clinics continues to shine bright in the darkest corners of our country, where abortions take place thousands of times a day. If we can defend the defenseless and then share God's love and compassion with them, we will see the transformation of generations to come. One heartbeat at a time and one heart at a time is how Preborn introduces mothers to their precious preborn babies. The ultrasound is the weapon and the heart is the game changer. This combination leads to Preborn saving over 280,000 babies to date. Your donation of $28 sponsors one ultrasound and is critical to the battle for life. Let's join together and save as many lives and hearts as possible. Please give as generously as you can. You can go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Okay, so the question today is, should Christians support Israel? Seems pretty straightforward. You'd be surprised how much confusion there is. And we'll talk about it on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something. Sandy Rios with you, again live at the Washington Hilton Hotel with all of these wonderful people around. And every single interview I've done so far, I have so thoroughly enjoyed. And this, the gentleman sitting across from me is some, I rarely repeat interviews in such a short time, but I enjoyed interviewing Dr. Jeff Myers so much. He's the president of Summit Ministries. About a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, and many of you enjoyed that broadcast we did. He's come out with a new book called Should Christians Support Israel? Simply put, should Christians support Israel? As though, so we have to sort of actually talk about that, and I thought we could do the same again today, but I've never met Jeff in person, so Jeff, it's really, I'll just shake your hand officially here.
Sandy, great to meet you, and when we did the interview, the book was not out. Now it is, and everybody who's listening to your show can get a free copy, so we'll talk about how that is.
They contact Summit Ministries, right?
We should tell them right now.
So.
Sure. You just go to summit.org/Israel, and I will send you a copy of the book. Because my real goal is to get everybody to order a case of books to give to everybody they know, their friends and family, people in church, especially those in Gen Z, because they've been so indoctrinated by pro-Hamas propaganda.
And that's kind of the mission of Summit Ministries. We should restate that, because you work with young people all the time, and you're talking about to them about, have historically talked to them about worldview, Christian worldview in the world, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, we're equipping and supporting them to do two things, to embrace God's truth and to champion a biblical worldview. We begin with John 8:32. Jesus said, if you follow my teachings, you'll be my disciples. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Everybody knows that verse. That's the motto of the Central Intelligence Agency, by the way. I mean, that
really?
That verse.
Are you serious?
The truth
did they know where it came
free.
From?
I have no idea.
They probably have no idea.
They have no idea.
They think Mao wrote that now, I think.
Right, yeah. But the word truth there in Greek, not to get too nerdy about it, but that word aletheia means reality. So Jesus is not saying, oh, you'll know your truth and that will set you free. It's you will know reality itself. And we know in the world of mental health that you cannot be healthy if you can't grapple with reality as it actually is. Well, Sandy, the same thing is true in societies.
Well, it's funny. I'm glad you told me that, because I'm sure I didn't make this up. But because of the work that I do, I'm always talking about truth. And we always have to now kind of explain truth, because people are so confused. But I always say truth is what comports with reality. What your eyes see and what you're experiencing, that's what is true. You can't, that's why you can't say, if I'm a woman, I'm a woman, I can't suddenly decide I'm a man. That is, doesn't comport with reality. I could say anything I want. But I know you, this is very simple, is exactly what you do. But the fact that the word comes from Greek,
It means reality.
Reality.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
That knowing Jesus, to the degree that you know Jesus, reality itself opens up to you. That's the claim that Jesus was making. And historically, that has been true in science, in the arts,
exactly.
Education, justice, politics, all these different areas. To the degree that people understood the truth from the perspective of Jesus, they changed the world for the better.
I was in Thailand in a Buddhist camp close to the river that divided Myanmar and Thailand.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people had become Christians in this camp. And through an interpreter, I was interviewing one of the men. And we were on our knees on a bamboo mat, about as close as you and I are. And so I just said to him, I said, how has, what word did I use? Discovering Jesus, following Jesus, how has that changed you? I mean, how did that change your life? And he was an older man, middle age probably. He said very thoughtfully, it's changed the way I think about everything. Through the interpreter, that's what he told me.
That's right.
A camp in remote Thailand among poor, otherwise poor people. It changes the way we think about everything, because it brings us into reality and truth, right?
Yeah, that's right. And if you get that message to the rising generation, and you show them, you know, ideas flow in patterns. What you believe about God will affect what you believe about reality, and then about what's right and wrong, and then about the value of life, and then what makes a good society, and what makes people mentally healthy, and what makes a good political structure, legal structure, economic structure, and so forth. So once they realize that, and they also start to realize, oh, wait a second, there are other worldviews out there that are counterfeits. They pretend to give the answers the way Christianity does, but they lie. They use a little bit of truth in the service of a greater lie. Those two things together, knowing a biblical worldview and recognizing that there are counterfeits and you can stand against them, becomes incredibly life-changing.
So we've moved into a new counterfeit that we've never experienced, not in my lifetime. And that is, even right now, given the conflict in Israel, which just goes on and on and on, that's a whole subject we could talk about, the fecklessness of this current administration, not supplying them, and you know, all of the machinations, the way they're suffering, and now Israeli soldiers are being killed because they can't get proper help and equipment. It's just, it's horrible. But the most horrible thing is that the church itself, and we'll say, we'll talk about the American church, Christian church, is confused on whether they should support Israel. I never thought we'd ever be confused, meaning me, part of the church, would ever be confused about that, Dr. Jeff. How in the world did that happen?
Well, a lot of people think of the issue of Israel as a geopolitical issue. It's just about land. But that's not true. It's a theopolitical issue. It is a battle between worldviews. So if we, and in the church, help people recognize this is not just about a little strip of land in the Middle East. This is about everything everywhere. It goes back to what we were talking about with worldview. So you can look at it theologically, that the people in the land are the children of the covenant with Abraham that God made on behalf of Abraham. Those people still there today have formed a new nation. Most Christians' theology hasn't caught up with it. I mean, for 500 years, Christians thought, well, Israel must be only a spiritual metaphor because there's no actual land of Israel that exists. Well, now there is. And that nation is being threatened every single day. There's one Jewish state in the world. There are 57 Islamic states. There are 1.8 billion Muslims in the world and 15 million Jews. Have you thought about that? I mean, no. 120 Muslims for every one Jew.
And give yet, that stat again.
120 Muslims for every Jew in the world. So when groups like Hamas claim to be the victims in the situation, that's not reflecting reality as it actually is. The purpose of Hamas, this group that Israel is fighting in the territory of Gaza, the purpose is to annihilate the state of Israel. So all of its leaders, the 600 top leaders, have all become millionaires and billionaires by skimming off of international aid designed for destitute Gazans. And they have also said, we don't care how many Gazans die as long as at the end of the struggle, Israel is annihilated. Christians need to know this.
Yeah, I do think one of the problems, I think maybe it's just because of lack of education or experience. And I have to have more of that because of my, just because of what God did in my life, not because I'm smarter, because I traveled a lot. And you learn that all worldviews are not the same, and you kind of, but Americans assess, for instance, the way Africans in a remote tribe feel about everything. They think everyone feels the same way about everything. And it might be a tribe of cannibals who don't actually feel the same way that Americans do. And I think that's kind of not that far from thinking about people who belong, who are practitioners of Islam. They have a different way. Everything's different with them. Just like that my Hindu Buddhist friend in that Thai camp said, it's changed the way I think about everything. It does change the way you think about everything. Yes. So they don't think like we do. Can you explain that better than I am?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Well, most people who are listening know somebody who's Muslim. They might have a friend or a neighbor or a coworker who is Muslim. What a lot of Christians don't understand is that Islam began with the Prophet Muhammad. He said that the angel Gabriel gave him a revealed scripture. And that scripture says that there's only one God and that God is Allah. Now, in the Quran, you do not know God personally. Right? You're not a child of God. That's the way the New Testament described it. In Islam, you are a slave of God. You don't know anything personally about God. All you know is the law that he has revealed, and that has been compiled together. It's called Sharia law. So Islam says, and most people don't even know this basic fact. I wish people in Washington, D.C. and leadership would know this. The Islamic worldview teaches that everybody who has ever been born was born a Muslim, one who submits. If you are not a Muslim now, it is because you are in rebellion against Allah. The Quran, 164 times, uses one word to describe how to make people submit to Allah, and it's the word jihad. Jihad is the forceful submission of people to Allah. Now, most Muslims, if they think about jihad at all, and most really don't, they think of it as a personal form of self-discipline. But there are these people in the world who believe they can use military force to make everybody in the world to submit to Allah in the way they specify, and that's where the conflict arises.
But that goes all the way back to Muhammad, does it not? I know he had peaceful years, but he also had years where this whole business of beheading and all of that goes back to Muhammad.
It does go back to Muhammad. Muhammad became increasingly violent in his later years, and so as the writings in the Quran continue, you see him becoming more and more violent, saying things like, you need to slaughter all of the Jews, which Hamas takes as a command. In fact, they put that in their first charter, they quoted from the Quran, all Jews have to be slaughtered. But here's the problem for a lot of Muslims today. If you look at scripture, you see the teachings of Jesus arising out of the foundation of the Old Testament. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, love your neighbor, and so forth. The Quran actually goes the opposite direction. It becomes more violent and more angry. And because those are the later writings, it's generally thought by Muslim scholars that they're more important and more valid than the earlier writings inside the Quran.
Let's talk about that. We didn't actually get into Islam much when we talked last. And, you know, one of Muhammad's visions, I don't know if he had other visions, where he wrote the satanic verses. Could you explain that a little bit? Did he understand it was really Satan? And did the Quran come from some of those satanic verses?
Well, so as far as I understand, and I'm on the outer limits of what I know about Islam on this.
Okay.
Right? So I wrote a book called Understanding the Times. It was an updated version of David Noble's original text, Understanding the Times. And I've got a chapter in there on Islam. So people can look at that to get in more detail. Muhammad had this vision, and he thought it was from the angel Gabriel. So, but what he says that Gabriel told him is against scripture.
Yes, right.
So the way he was tying it in and trying to get people of the book, is what they're called in the Quran, people of the book, Jews and Christians, to get them to submit to this vision that he had about Allah, he said, well, Jesus was a prophet. All these Old Testament individuals, they were also prophets. And now I'm the latest prophet. So it was this narcissistic kind of messianic vision. And during his lifetime, it was horrible. But as soon as armies got a hold of that and decided to have a religious motivation for subjecting all of Europe, that is what led to all of the battles in the 1400s and the 1500s. And that's what leads to the conflict we have today with countries like Iran.
Right. Well, and also think about what's happened in England and France. I'm sorry, I'm not at a loss to think of the Arabic word, but there is a practice that they do. They've been doing this for centuries, where they move into countries and lay really low, populate, overpopulate, and then begin to speak up, and then begin to demand, and then begin, when they become the majority, to force people to bow the knee to Islam. That's the method. I've forgotten the word for it, but people don't understand that. And they also don't know that Islam practices taqiyya, which means they feel it's righteous to lie to you if you're not Muslim.
That is correct, yes. There's a brand new book coming out by a man who grew up in Islam, has a PhD in New Testament studies from the University of Durham, which is the top theological school in the world, at least one of the top. And his name is Mateen Elas. And he wrote a book called Fairy Tale Islam. This is going to be earth-shattering when this book comes out here in about 2 weeks, because he's disabusing people of the notion that somehow Islam in the words of its leaders, is a religion of peace. It simply isn't true. Now, people said that for political purposes because they didn't want to make all Muslims around the world mad at them. But people have taken that on and said, "Oh, if you don't believe that, then you must be some kind of a racist." But Mateen Elise, having come from that background, is able to demonstrate with clarity and documentation that the real nature of Islam is something we should be very careful about and concerned with.
Absolutely. You know, an anecdote. My husband was with the FBI. I'm going to speak out of school here because it's been a long time. But you know what? I'll be careful. I won't say the exact bureau. Let's just say he came out of a certain bureau.
Okay.
And the bureau chief ended up sitting next to me on an airplane. And so I was in the middle. I was listed on SPLC's list of the women against Islam with Brigitte Gabriel and Ann Coulter, and I can't even remember. There was
so
a whole bunch of
us. So you were called
a
hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yes, and they actually sketched out our faces and did this publication and showed where we lived, not our addresses. It was very dangerous because this is when Americans were being beheaded and there were all these attacks in the United States. So I knew quite a bit about Islam. I talked about it a lot. I still do when it comes up. But it's been quiet for a while, you see. We've gone quiet here on this. But I was sitting next to this head of the bureau and just started talking to him about Islam because I knew that particular headquarters had invited a ton of Muslim men in their white long robes and their white caps into what was called a Patriots Night. And my husband was presenting that night, and during the middle of his presentation, they went over to the site in the FBI building inside and took out their prayer rugs and bent down and did their prayers. So I was very exorcised over that, and I started talking to him. He said, "Oh, no, but you don't understand. We bring our enemies in, and we get closer to them, and we make friends, and then, you know, that's how we were able to, you know, control what happens." And I asked him if he knew about Takiyah. He had no knowledge of Islam. Bottom line, no idea. None idea. He's in charge of this whole bureau. And that's what happened with the FBI. They stopped teaching what Islam really was. So that's dangerous. But now we're talking about this whole issue of Israel. How has Islamists, how have they really controlled the narrative? What part have they played in this?
Well, Islamist is the correct term. So we're not talking here about our co-workers and neighbors necessarily, although they might gravitate toward that. But Islamism is the key term. So here's how this works. Gaza is made up of people from what's called Sunni Islam. But they have been funded by Iran and given weapons from Iran. Iran is a Shiite Muslim.
Right.
So Shiites believe that someday there will come the 12th Imam, Muhammad al-Mahdi. And when that Imam comes, he will force the entire world to submit to this Islamic vision that we've been talking about. The barrier, the thing that stands in the way of Muhammad al-Mahdi returning as the 12th Imam, is the existence of the State of Israel. So that is why
I did not know that.
That is why Iran is so against Israel. It is a theopolitical, not a geopolitical conflict.
All right. So I know this could take. Let me ask you again. But from my perspective, like CARE, Council of American Islamic Relations, we're the PR firm for the Muslim Brotherhood. Muslim Brotherhood is Sunni. And they are connected to Hamas.
Hamas was formed out of the Muslim Brotherhood.
So they are particularly skillful, incredibly skillful at propaganda. And so that's a lot of what we have coming out of Hamas. Would you agree?
Yes. So in the book, Should Christians Support Israel, I document how Hamas planned a propaganda campaign to go alongside its attack of southern Israel on October 7th. That campaign has been carried on by a number of different organizations. The Students for Justice for Palestine, that's the main group that people hear
it's
about.
It's probably Muslim Brotherhood, one of those umbrella organizations, because there are many of them.
Well, one of them, unfortunately, is called Churches for Middle East Peace. Churches for Middle East Peace, which is funded and founded by denominations that you've heard of. from the Christian Reformed Church to the Episcopal Church to the United Methodist Church to the American Baptist Church. Those churches fund this organization. They began sending out press releases on October 7th, repeating the Hamas line that the people of southern Israel were settlers. It said, we decry the rise in tensions between Hamas and Israel, which is not an accurate summary of what happened at all on October 7th. So I read through all of their press releases and realized they're buying the propaganda as well, and they're spreading it into churches.
And that's a lot of mainline denominations, but as we talked last time, and I would commend people to the last conversation that we had, evangelical churches have bitten this thing too. Seminaries are not teaching pastors the role of Israel and God's call that hasn't changed, you know.
Right.
The promise that has not been removed and has not been focused on Christians. That's just ridiculous, yeah. And unscriptural, and yet... Well,
and let me be clear, we're not, this is not about supporting 100% of what the state of Israel
right,
does,
exactly.
Right? I mean, I don't even support all the things that the American government
exactly.
does, right? So that's not what this is about. It's actually something more. And I think what it is ultimately about is, does Israel have a right to exist? Must Hamas be destroyed in its capacity to field a military and govern? And does God still have a plan for the Jewish people?
And that's what you talk about. I'm glad to have this book because before I just was talking to you from notes, but should Christians support Israel as the book, seeking a biblical worldview in an impossible situation? And I want to say what this is so well written, the parts that I was able to read. Jeff gives really great illustrations, historical illustrations. It's not a large book. It's not long. It's easy, and it's
yes.
accessible, and yet it's very intellectual.
That's right. It's 120 pages,
yeah.
So it's something that a person can read in 3 or 4 hours, and it's got 200 individual pieces of documentation for everything that is in the book. So it's the kind of book you could even give to someone who says they're anti-Israel and just ask them, read this and let me know what you think. They might come back to you and say it's terrible for blah, 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 but it doesn't matter because if you give people the truth, if you give them the facts, then it starts to change their mind.
I think it should be given to pastors, and so I want to say that to pastors listening to me, to give to other pastors, and remember that you can get this for, I think, for free or for a nominal fee, whatever you want to give.
No, it's free. If
okay.
you want to pitch in something for shipping and handling, you can.
Okay.
And some, you know, small percentage of people do that. But right now, the most important thing, Sandy, is getting it,
yes.
as you said, into the hands of pastors right. who can get it to people who've become anti-Israel, especially right. those Gen Z young people. Just go to summit.org/Israel.
All right, before we close, we have to talk about this for a second. And there's a new poll. It says nearly half of Gen Z are sympathetic to Hamas. And so that was amazing. Nearly half of Gen Z, that's people that we're listening to, that's their children.
Yes.
How could we win those kids back?
Well, the first thing you have to do is help them develop a biblical worldview. And I think that's really critical. Second, they have to understand the counterfeit worldviews, that Hamas is giving a counterfeit understanding of reality. And the third thing is you give them the facts. So in the book, Should Christians Support Israel, I just go through the facts. This is the true history of the situation. This is the true nature of Hamas. And I quote from groups like Amnesty International and the Human Rights Campaign, who are in fact anti-Israel, but they still say Hamas is evil. So those kinds of sources can be very persuasive for people.
Right.
One cool thing in one of the polls that we did, we found that though generally about 50% of young adults are anti-Israel, we asked them, do you think that Hamas is unjust because all of its leaders have become millionaires and billionaires by skimming international aid designed for destitute Gazans? And they changed their minds very quickly. 50% of them changed their minds in one question.
Wow.
Now, they didn't all say, okay, now I'm for Israel, but they some of them were just cast into indecision. They just said, okay, well, now I'm not sure. But that's still progress if you just give people the truth
right.
that they're not going to read in the legacy media.
Okay, so this book is for younger people and pastors. It doesn't, as an age You don't exactly gear just to Gen Z, do you?
No, I don't gear it to just Gen Z. Yeah. But what I'm finding is a lot of young adults in Gen Z are really tired of just watching TikTok videos, Instagram, things like that. So a book, weirdly, is very persuasive to them because it gives the documentation in print.
Is this going to be an Audible?
Audiobook? I'm planning to record an audiobook when I get back to Colorado from this event.
Because so many people are doing that now, and that would be a great way to get it out to. Let me repeat, if you would like one of these books, Should Christians Support Israel? And I'm telling you, this is something you need to have for your church. Give it to your pastor. Share it with your Sunday school class. Share it with your children, you know, just et cetera, et cetera. Especially for Christians. I mean, this is important. Go to summit.org/Israel, summit.org/Israel, and you can get a book for free and maybe give some donation. That would be a good thing.
And if you want more, then you just let us know. Just tell us how many you want, because we want it to be distributed to people in congregations who care. We cannot make the same mistake that Americans made in the 1930s, saying we feel sorry for the Jews, but we're not going to help them. Because 6 million people died, and the American government and the American people could have done something about it, and they chose not to. We must not make that same mistake again.
You know, to your point, we live in a pretty conservative area, and we have, under our American flag, we fly an Israeli flag. You wouldn't believe how controversial that is.
Very controversial.
Yeah, I don't know if I can, you know, it's just amazing. So there are ways that we can support them, and we should in every way that we can. Not all of them, as Jeff said, it isn't to do with politics. It has to do with God's call, his promise to them. We're part of the same tree. We're just a branch that grew out of the tree.
Yeah. Super important. Yeah. This is not about Israel cheerleading. It's not America good, therefore Israel good. Right. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is doing the godly thing and seeking an in-depth biblical worldview of the situation, including things like just war, issues of genocide, how do you rebuild after this war, and those kinds of things.
Yeah, wonderful. Dr. Jeff Meyer, thank you. It's been great. And again, one more time, I'm going to say go to summit.org/Israel. Summit.org/Israel. So I'll say it again. Summit.org/Israel. Try to say that 10 times really fast. Anyway, thank you, Jeff.
Thanks,
all right.
Sandy.
Sandy Rios at Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Every podcast I tell you about Preborn, and generally speaking, I ask you to donate as much as you can to, you know, provide the ultrasounds. But if you have the means, and some of you do, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a bigger way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, all you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Well, this was This were the protests that happened in Washington, D.C. the day that Benjamin Netanyahu spoke in Congress. And this was an event that happened later in the day in front of the Union Station, which is just a few blocks from the Capitol. You can see the Capitol and the dome. It's just walkable. I've done it many, many, many times. And, of course, they burned the American flag, and they wrote, Hamas is coming, and a number of things. But the thing that you notice when you look at that crowd, at least that particular crowd, is it's young people. And the person that actually lit the flag on fire was a younger white boy, 20s, I'd say. The protests on that day were populated by a lot of young people. I noticed the crowds in Kamala Harris's rally, along with announcing her new VP candidate, Tim Walz, were largely college-age kids. Why am I making this point? I'm making this point because, ladies and gentlemen, these are our children. They're not somebody else's children. They're our children. Our children are learning nothing about Israel at home, in their church, and certainly not when they get to college. They're hearing just the opposite, how horrible Israel is and how they oppress people, how privileged they are. They have been morphed into something most of us don't recognize. But we have to stop and think about our own responsibility to raise our kids properly. I think we have abdicated the instruction of our children not only to schools but also to churches. And the churches are just not taking care of business, and certainly neither are the schools. And so we have in the streets our children protesting Israel, asking for the arrest of Benjamin Netanyahu, burning the American flag, and it has to stop. And I think one of the things has to happen is that parents need to take hold of things, take hold of the situation. If your child is in a school that, and you're paying for it, and they're in a school where they're being propagandized constantly to hate their country, to embrace communism, socialism. And if they're clueless and they're coming into this world with this dangerous ignorance, then maybe it's time to actually do something. Maybe it's time to actually do something. I hope that we've educated you today enough so that you understand biblically why it's important that Christians support Israel. And certainly the particulars right now are so clear. When I was a kid and we were learning to support Israel, Israel was just a, you know, dry patch of land with shepherds and sheep and not much greenery, and certainly not the industrial complex that it is. Maybe that's the wrong word to use, because that'll trigger somebody. They have built so many, they have so many innovations. It's amazing to go there now. So many green places that were not present before, vineyards, all kinds of things. They've developed a beautiful, beautiful country in such a very small square mileage. It's just amazing. But now we can see why God still has his hand on Israel and why they still are the apple of his eye. And they're waging a war by themselves pretty much in the Middle East, surrounded by enemies on all sides. And if we're not clearer now on why we need to support them, then you've been listening to CBS too much, or ABC too much, or CNN too much. You need to find out what's actually happening and not let it be filtered through the words and the mind of people who hate Israel. They hate Israel. So just understand that. And I wanted just one little interesting sidelight. I was reading just this morning, ironically, the Iranians, I mean the real Iranians, not the mullahs, not the Ayatollah Khomeini, the Iranians are siding with Israel against their own regime. And I'll give you an example. It's Ynet News has gone out and done interviews on the streets with Iranians, and they say, overall, the Iranian people are extremely pro-Israel and reject the regime's warmongering. But multiple Iranians expressed concern about operating on Iranian soil. One said, I was worryingly happy as he got what he deserved, meaning the leader of Hezbollah, but I'd rather he was dealt with someplace else. I also had a good feeling that potentially some Iranians were involved. From Hawaz, who has previously been imprisoned for his activism against the regime, he told Ynet News that all Iranians were delighted by the assassination. Iranians are really happy. We are really against the regime of the Islamic Republic and Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Taliban, who are all connected with the murderous regime of the Islamic Republic. We hope all these people will be destroyed as soon as possible. So there's a lot more to say, but it's Ynet News, and they it's actually a long article. It's interesting. But I think part of it, you know, there's kind of a revival. Now, I don't know. I'm telling you from my perspective and limited knowledge. But I do know that there has been a revival of sorts. How grand it is or big, I don't know. In Iran, lots of people have come to Christ. And so there's a theme there, and there's an understanding. And if the Iranians, who are part of this horrible regime, who are Muslim, Shia Muslim for the most part, can feel this way about Israel, then why can't Christians in North America get a grip on what's true and what isn't? So I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Dr. Jeff Meyer. I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan. Well, you know, we have two sponsors. Preborn, we talk about a lot. And Timothy Plan is our newest. Timothy Plan is a place where you can put your money. When you invest in companies, they are very careful to invest your money in companies that share your values so that you're not funding many, many bad things across the globe, which these big funds are doing now. They just are. So you can put your money where your values are and discover through Timothy Plan how to be a biblically responsible investor. Just visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.